Cough and a lurch and a hiccup. Yeah, I just had the hiccups. I don't know what the heck that's about. Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and RJ in the golden chrome tower of power up there looking down on us. And redfish still continue to be pretty decent numbers. You know, we've seen over the last 6 or 7 years, Robert, a huge decline in redfish. Sometime in January, February, and then a huge boom in redfish August, September.
Right.
Like, we have a few months where everything just goes crash, and they're, oh, there's no redfish, they're all gone, they're all dead, but the world's ending, we got 12 years, and the planet's going to die. Really? But every fall, we seem to be thousands of redfish. We've joked for years about a rift in the time-space continuum where these redfish leave our, plane of existence going to another realm or distant galaxy or something.
It's definitely bizarre, you know, and even the last several years, like you're saying, 5-6 years, even the rat reds kind of disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a complete void of redfish for a few months.
Yeah.
Are we seeing that yet?
No, definitely not. It's actually the opposite, which has been weird. We've got anywhere from 20-inch to 30-inch redfish being caught.
I'm here at 16, 18s.
Well, I'm talking fish that are in the slot because you, under normal situations prior to 6 years ago, January and February were always rat red season. Didn't matter where you went, in a creek, along the shoreline, anywhere, it was always small redfish,
right.
10 to 15 inches. You could catch 1,000 redfish a day and be lucky if you caught one that was 20 inches. But this year we got rat reds that are mainly up in the creeks and in some of the little tributaries off the main shorelines. But we've got bigger redfish that are staying along the outer perimeters of like the west wall, the east wall, and even out along the intercoastal. Basically, you're finding little islands and oyster bars.
What's going on with the ICW? It's from what I'm hearing from the channel itself out to the docks that go along it, even as far away as Gasparilla Island, which is actually quite a ways from the ICW at some point. Some points is very close, but
right.
I mean, whether you're going there up through the miserable Slow Mile or in Lemon Bay, these docks and pilings, and it just seems to be redfish.
Seems to be redfish and all the species for that matter, which makes it really kind of cool because it's like it's almost May fishing conditions with a lot of wintertime fish mixed in with it, you know, because usually that's where we'd kind of look for fish staging up. But redfish are under the docks, they're in the sand holes, they're underneath the mangroves, under all around any little oyster bar. But like you're saying, from Pine Island Sound all the way up to the Venice jetties, and even Sarasota Bay has been having a pretty decent redfish here from what I've heard from a couple people.
And I'll give Engman Marine credit for actually getting the CCA to do some really good stuff for as far as releasing a lot of fingerlings and a lot of fish out here. Literally thousands of snook and redfish have been released in this area because of Engman Marine. And I think the reason is Engman's got quite a bit of money. And I think the CCA is trying to keep him happy because he's a big donor. And I don't like the CCA. I'm not a fan at all. If you're going to do something with them, do it through Engman Marine. They got a guy there coordinating these efforts, working with high school programs, working. They've got an amazing thing at the Englewood High School or Lemon Bay High School, one of those. I don't remember the name of the school, but they're literally getting machines to plant seagrass. And the biology teachers there are, you know, working with the students to grow seagrasses and do stuff. It's an amazing thing. all happening because of the coordination of Engman Marine as liaison ambassador. We got a reef from that, the whatever that Phoenix Reef is. And while I don't like the CCA. I think they're a bunch of hypocrites. But Engman Marine is doing some phenomenal stuff by getting the CCA, using them to permit and get fish and do things. And most people don't know about it. So I'm three cheers for Gary Engman. He's the driving force behind it. Now, he's got the guy who's in charge of it who's doing the work. But like with most things, if the man at the top is not pushing for it, the other people aren't going to do it. And so it all boils back to the buck stops there with Gary Engman. And three cheers for you, Gary. Huge fan. Awesome job getting stuff done for Charlotte County. It's staggering what the Engman Marine has been able to accomplish. And I would normally you would say in conjunction with, but I don't know if words like in spite of or, you know, I don't know what they had to do to get it done. But
yeah, regardless,
good job, Gary.
Regardless how it works, you know, it's made it phenomenal for the fishing and the boating in general. And that's the main reason why we're all here. I mean, this is the reason why we're doing this. You don't even have to be a fisherman. You just got to be able to enjoy the outdoors, whether it's a boat or from shore or whatever. So anything that helps benefit our area as a whole is incredible.
But I'm going to say, if you want to donate to a cause, coordinate it through Engman.
Right.
Because that way you have the best chance of your money actually doing good locally, doing, I mean, actually getting stuff done right. I'm a big fan. Have you heard of that woman? I think it's a woman biology teacher who's doing amazing things out there somewhere in Englewood, Lemon Bay.
No, I haven't, and I think that's a good piece of news to get out once we've got it.
Yeah, I'll get all the exact details. I'm going to stop and talk to Gary. I've known Gary since the 80s. You know, both of us have been in business forever. So I'll stop and chat with him and get all the details. But profoundly impressed with what Engman's done. And I would have never been able, I would have never believed it. And how they have the patience to do this, God only knows. But we have a phenomenon going on our Gulf beaches. It's really peculiar, and I don't understand it. And Robert, and people have been telling me about all this bait. And, I mean, we're talking right up against the shoreline. I mean, in inches of water, not feet, inches. And then going out into the waters right there. Now, when they're not re-nourishing the beach in the Gulf of Mexico, what you're going to find, people standing on shore, and then they swim out, and there's kind of a trough. And then there's a little sandbar they go out to swim and stand on.
Right.
Now, I'm going to break with something that we've been talking about for 35 years, that a surf rod is not really that good for this area. And I'm going to say right now, for some reason or another, we're not seeing the fish in that trough that we did for 30 years or time immemorial. I think, maybe in my opinion, now this is a guess, and I'm going to ask everybody here for their guess. There's gazillions, millions or billions of bait fish from the shore out to half, three quarters of the way to where that sandbar normally is. And it seems like the vast majority of the predatory fish are staying from that bar out, where you've got to have a long rod to get out there. I mean, you've really got to zing it to get it to that sandbar. And a 7-foot rod ain't going to get it.
No.
And why? Now, the only fish that I know of that's regular coming inside of the sandbar is some lizard fish, some pompano. But pompano are not bait fish chasers as a general rule.
Right.
But the pompano are coming along the shore. A lot of lizard fish, which are, they eat bait fish. But they're smaller fish, but they have big jaw, triangular head. They look like a snake fish, but they're a lizard fish. But why have all of a sudden Jack's used to run the shoreline? We used to catch ladyfish right off the shoreline. You used to catch mackerel, you know, all the
small sharks, all even, these even redfish and snook.
Where are the predatory fish? Why is this getting less popular for the predatory fish from that underwater? You don't see the sandbar. If you swim out to it, you go through 10 feet of water or whatever, and then you're up in 3 foot, 4 foot.
Right.
And from that bar in, we're not seeing those predatory fish. RJ, got anything?
No, I have no idea why that would be, because like you said, from time immemorial, you walk the surf, and that's where you're looking for. You're looking for the troughs to fish in. Now, are the bait fish in the troughs?
That's the whole thing. Robert, yeah. You're seeing a ton of bait fish in from the sand out 20, 30 feet.
Yeah.
Are they extending past the bar?
Yeah.
Well, no, but not much. Most of them are inside of the bar to the shoreline. That's where I've been hearing about stuff. Once you get to the sandbar, there's not much out past it, bait fish-wise.
Depends on the area.
Okay.
But as a consistent theme,
is
though?
Is the area where it's more broad out, is that the areas like Tampa down to Venice where they are catching Spanish mackerel from land? Or, because down here, we're not seeing the mackerel coming up where people are catching them off land.
Yeah, but even when the bait was real heavy just on the outside of the bar the way it was about 10 days ago, still nothing out there. But staying with the theme of what we're talking about in general, because the bait has been...
Oh, why the hell would we want to do that?
Well...
Why the heck?
Well, because there's a little bit of a hodgepodge here, because right now there's a lot of bait, like you're saying, on the inside of the trough, which is usually a consistent theme throughout the entire summertime when we have a lot of bait around, and it's void of those predators. You know, right now we've just got that weird void where there's just none of those right there just off our beach, period, until you get up there to that North Venice, South Sarasota, all the way up through Tampa. And some of that bait's in right up against the shoreline. Some of it's off 10 miles off the beaches. But I don't understand why the last several years it's gotten less and less and less with a consistency of predators, you know, because usually it's the whiting, you know, the snook, the redfish. Even in the wintertime, you would still have a few snook, a few redfish.
Well, you got bluefish, ladyfish, jacks, Spanish
blue
mackerel,
runners.
Blue runners, just a mirage of fish.
The only thing
usually cruise the shorelines, and they're not coming into the shore anymore.
No, and the only thing that's changed, though, that I have really never caught in good numbers is lizard fish. Why are they all of a sudden being caught so readily from shore?
Yeah, they used to be out in 30 feet of water or more.
Yeah.
You almost never caught them from the beach.
Never. I mean,
but
I think I can think of twice in 30 years I've caught a lizard fish on the beach, but the last 2 years, anytime I've gone out to the beach, I've caught several. How does that work?
You've got a lot of beach right up next to the land, and we're seeing a lack of predators. Now, that would explain why the fish are close to the beach, because the predators aren't coming in for them.
Mm-hmm.
But we're seeing further north, where the bait's a little more spread out, you have a lot more predatory fish on them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, kind of befuddles my mind that, okay, now that's a safe haven from predators? Doesn't make any sense.
No.
Could it be the beach renourishment has changed the structure of the bottom out there? And when they've done all this stuff out there, they put the jetties in at Stump Pass, they renourished the beach at Boca. Did that change the aspect of the beach enough to make it less predator-friendly and more bait-fish-friendly?
I think you're onto something there. You know, I mean, because the sand that they bring in to renourish, you know, whether it's brought from digging a mine inside inland or pumping it in from offshore, it's still sterile. You know, it's got a total, you know, if it's pumped in from offshore out in the Gulf from a half a mile to a mile, whatever they're pumping it in from, that's a totally different variety of ecosystem as far as the bacteria and critters that live in that sand out there that cannot live up in that shallow water. So basically, you're still creating a desert theme along those beaches.
But what you're saying there to me is counterintuitive as to what
not,
we're seeing. No, wait a minute, I understand different microorganisms and stuff like that, but wouldn't the bait fish be more attracted or less likely to go there without the correct microorganism stuff that they would feed on than if it had all the right stuff? And the predator fish, which in my opinion would be less likely to care about that and more just care about what they're going to eat. So I understand what you're saying, and it changes everything. It destroys the ecosystem along the shore. Mm-hmm. It takes a few years to build that back up because the sand fleas and the little those little clams and stuff that dart through the
coquinas
and all that, all these things require food, which is more is they're not getting if you bring it in from you know, a sand pit in the middle of the state, and you're getting different, if not harmful stuff, if you're taking it from 30, 40 feet, at, you know, deep, bringing it in.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't that be less likely to attract the bait fish?
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe those pelagic fish are a little bit more susceptible to different pHs in the water than the bait fish are. Maybe the bait fish like that different pH system that might be being created from the different bacteria from that depth of water, or they're not bothered by it at all, versus your pelagic fish might be, you know, because it's, you know, it's going to create some other kind of different chemical composition in the water naturally.
All right. RJ, for better or worse.
Following off what Robert just said, I'm wondering if the turbidity of the water has anything to do with it. Is it, if it's cloudier...
Oh, it's definitely cloudier because
right, so
that's more sediment than it is real sand, whether it's brought in from a pit or from pumped in from offshore.
And I've seen that anytime they've renourished the beach all along the beach for the first 15, 20 feet out, it's pretty dank. You know, there's a lot of stuff in the water. So pelagic fish are primarily hunting by eyesight.
And now you're onto something.
And so if they can't see accurately or well enough to capture bait fish in more turbid water, more cloudy water, then they're less likely to be in there because they're not going to be able to feed. Where the bait fish, on the other hand, probably don't give a damn. And they're sheltered in there then because they can't be seen as well. So you got the masses of bait fish in there. The predator fish aren't coming in because they can't see well.
Do you have a little recording of things that, like people cheering and pops going off and stuff?
Why, do we think we just hit it?
Well, I think you got this one. That's the most likely thing. I mean,
it's
you know.
Really very, very realistic and logical because you're absolutely 100% correct in the aspect of cloudiness because you go out there for 2 months after they've pulled out all the equipment. And it's always got that skim milk color kind of look.
And there's
to
always
it.
That little bit of skim on the top of the water.
Right.
And so that would be my guess is that the predator fish can't see as well, so they're not going to hunt there. They're going to hunt where the water's clearer. There may be less bait fish, but there's enough to sustain them when they're on the outside of the bar.
Now, I think anybody who knows the three of us understands that we don't do anything scripted. I have in front of me a list of possible topics from Robert, but they're literally three words, like Spanish in Sarasota or, you know, redfish ICW passes. These are the only notes we use. All we do in this is see, when we're driving up, we talk about something. I said, well, Robert, that's going to be our off topic for today, our why is it? But the answers you get, the questions that are asked are pretty much off the cuff. Everything's done within the last, you know, 20 minutes before the show hits the air, and there's no pre-written answers to the questions. And these guys have no idea what I'm going to ask because everything comes off the top of my head.
Even if it was written down, we probably still wouldn't know what you were going to ask.
Yeah, that's right. True. Who can read my writing anyway?
And I think
that's why you write the notes.
And I think the feedback I've gotten from people is that they enjoy the fact that we dig our way through it based on our experience and our knowledge.
Well, what the takeaway from this is not so much that we definitively answered the bait fish question, But when you're out there looking at the water and you're trying to catch fish, and you think back to what we were talking about, how we were thinking of it, what we were looking at, what brought us to that decision, and you apply that to wherever you are, whether you're here in Southwest Florida, up on the East Coast in Michigan or in
Maine
or whatever. Yeah, Jersey. Love you, Jersey. You know, all these things. I'm going to throw in Iowa. I talked to a wonderful couple from Iowa, and I'm not going to go in. I'm not going to say much, but we know the caliber of people in Iowa. We all respect you, and we know you're not what they say on the news. And if you are one of the ones accused, join me. Become an independent. That's all I'm going to say about that. But we love you, Iowa. We know who you are. We're with the people of Iowa. Forget the news media. We're behind you 100%. So it was really quite heart-tearing. These people were actually embarrassed to say they were from Iowa.
Oh,
and
geez,
I was like,
that's too bad.
No, no, no. We know the news lies. We know if you hear it on the nightly news on a network, it's wrong. And to be called racist? Really? Iowa? They're like, they're just normal, nice people.
Well, they're some of the nicest people you're going to meet in the United States. Go to Iowa and everybody's friendly.
They're friendly, warm, engaging people who, I don't want to go into it because there's a thousand things, but I was really upset by that, that anybody should ever do that. What is that?
Well, I have a hat on. It's because I want to make a confession.
Okay.
This is a, well, let me put it this way. For most of my life, I've rowed canoes, paddled canoes, rowed canoes, sailed canoes. I've always been in love with canoes. But it comes a time in your life. There comes a time in your life when you have to move on to a different love, something sleeker, newer, more exciting. And I confess, I now have a kayak.
Is that what that hat's about?
It's a kayak hat, right.
That's a kayak hat?
Yep, yep, yep.
Just on the hat alone, you might want to change boats. Sorry, RJ, you're like family to me, but sometimes family should just tell other family when to say no. I'm building a kayak boat, by the way.
You are a kayak boat.
It's a yak taxi, we call it, uh-huh. And I own yaktaxi.com and a bunch of other things like that. But so we're going to get your – when this boat gets ready, it's supposed to be ready in March, and I got a brand new 150 Yamaha to go on it, and we're going to be taking people all the different destinations in Charlotte Harbor. And I did that boat, what, 4 years ago? 5 years ago?
Yeah.
And I misdesigned the boat. I overthought it. I wanted it to do a couple things that were almost impossible. I made it work, but not quite. So I sat down, redesigned it, redid the engineering on the boat. And with what I learned from my first attempt, and never be afraid of failure, boys and girls. That I fail all the time. The trick is to go, okay, done. Now, in this case, I want to prove a point. I want to prove that this is the ultimate, coolest kayak transport boat in the world. And I believe I designed it, and I think it works great. So when we get that together, you'll be part of the testing, because I've got a captain now who's going to run the boat once I get it in the water, and it's at the metal shop because it's a lot of metal fabrication.
Can I wear my hat?
Yes, you can wear the hat, but I would do it on the boat where there's no cell phone cameras.
Okay.
Okay. I want to get into bass fishing in Northport. There's some awesome bass fishing going around. Now, we know there's a couple little lakes with peacock bass. We know the largemouth are hitting good. Any good ideas for ways to catch them right now? I'm hearing it's all over the map.
It still is all over the map.
The canals in Northport are teeming with hungry bass.
Yeah. I mean,
is that like lots of rain?
Yeah, yeah, like lots of rain.
Okay.
It's pretty wild because, I mean, guys are buying worms, spinnerbaits, spider jigs. It's been a pretty broad spectrum of lures for
you brought them. Out spider bait. And they've, you know, had the flip the bird, and we've had, you know, the multi-segment baits. Every few years, there's another one of these gimmick baits that comes out. And it's going to catch every bass that ever swam. It's the best thing ever. Right. And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? And the only reason we bought some of them is so we could put them up on the wall as, you know, reminders. We had that one where when you pop the rod, it had a lure, was a topwater popper, and the string pulled out, and then the tail fluttered around.
Yeah, I have one of those in my office.
These are awesome things, but
there's another one that's out there now. It's a tube you stick inside the bait fish, and it's activated by salt water, and it makes the bait fish wiggle like it's a dead fish now. Yeah. It makes it wiggle like it's alive.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's...
And which sounded like a great idea until you heard the price, and then you said, oh, well, somebody cuts me off. I'm out $20.
You know, I was looking at that bait cannon, and if you're fishing from land, you put your bait in some water in a tube thing, and then you had this air compression cannon. You'd slide that down in. It had the leader already on it and everything, and the bait's all frozen in a... you know, water, so it's the shape of a projectile. And then they pull this lever, and the 120 pounds of air pressure launches this thing out 200 feet. And I said, wow, that's really cool if you want to die or get seriously maimed.
Yeah.
But I've seen several people use it. I won't sell it. I'm not accepting the liability on it. But there's a lot of cool gadgets out there. Do you remember the... It was like a Zebco 202. It had a spin cast reel on it, but you pumped it up and you put your hook, the bait, the bobber inside of this capsule. You stuck it down in this little fishing pole and you pumped it like a shotgun, like a BB gun, and you'd shoot it. It would shoot it out in the lake for you. It was awesome, but they fell apart right away, but literally awesome to see. But anyway, back to the bass fishing. This is scripted. Yes, yeah. Uh-huh. All the stuff we come up with, we've pre-written down. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just that...
I think people wish I would stay on script. Do I need a teleprompter on each side of me?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy just the varieties of things that they're catching them on. But I think the number one most consistent thing that's been going on has been using shiners.
Yeah.
I mean, the freshwater shiners have been... catching the variety of sizes from little 1-pounders all the way up to, I think the biggest one I heard about was about 7 pounds this week. but several guys have been buying the rattle traps the last several days.
I've noticed the rattle traps, and there's a gambler. It's almost a why not, I think it is.
Yeah.
But the rattle trap and the why nots were both selling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when they made the lure, they go, I don't know, would you fish with that? Why not?
Yeah, basically. But it doesn't look like anything.
Isn't it weird how rattle traps are making a comeback? Everything old is new again?
Yeah.
I mean, really coming on strong with the rattle traps. I think most people work them a little too fast. And I don't think they give them time to fall enough. In freshwater, they're going to fall about 2 foot a second. And if you can get them down so they're coming right along the bottom and then following the contour up, it's one of the only lures I throw again and again and again and again and again in the same spot, mostly because if it didn't entice them as food the first time, by the 15th time, it's enticed them because they're aggravated, they're annoyed, they want it to go away. And if you don't have a fist, if I get annoyed with something, I'm going to punch it in the face.
Right.
But with a bass, he doesn't have a fist, so he's just going to bite it.
Sure.
Same difference. You caught the fish.
True. No, and I can see that absolutely working. You know, a couple of guys have been actually using them and almost jigging them in some of those deeper lakes. You know, one of the guys in the Rotunda Lakes, he was actually taking it and casting it out and letting it sink all the way to the bottom, and he said it's a pain in the butt because you start picking up the hydrilla and other grasses, but he said if you can get it to go down and then start popping it while you're retrieving it and letting it sink and then retrieving it and popping it, basically working it like it's some type of soft plastic shad tail or something like that, He
basically
said he's been,
like a jig, a bucktail jig, whatever.
Yeah, he's working it like that and has been doing really pretty consistently well. But he's picked up several channel cats on it. And some of the tilapia have been hitting it by doing that. And he said he's never been able to get the tilapia to hit anything other than worms for
now,
him.
He's using a mini trap quarter?
The quarter ounce. The
quarter ounce. Yeah. I would love to try that with a mini.
Right.
Because those little mini rattle traps, they're awesome that way. And the nice part about it is rattle trap is made in America. All of it. So, except the hooks.
Right.
They buy the hooks. But other than that, they're all made in the U.S. It's all made in the U.S.
Yeah,
packaging, lure, everything.
Just kind of neat.
Louisiana,
it's working.
By the way. Yeah, Wes and people at Rattle Trap are awesome.
Yeah.
Let's see.
You know, we got that bad storm coming through tonight. That could change.
It's going to change fishing. A lot, isn't it?
It's going to change the beaches. It's going to change the freshwater. There's going to be some interesting stuff. They're calling for, 8 to 10 foot seas tonight into early morning.
30 to 40 mile an hour winds, gusts higher. So it's going to be a pretty severe night. Good night to bring all the lawn furniture in.
Yeah, tomorrow morning would be a really good morning to go.
What's
either
it supposed to be?
8 to 10 foot, I believe, just offshore.
Yeah, but I mean, you were saying the now.
Well, it's going to change.
The winds are out of the west, right?
Yeah, it's going to be southwest, west, and then going into northwest tonight, and it's going to beat the beaches pretty good. So
yeah,
it's
we're not going to see a huge temperature drop, but
a little bit, but not much.
The wind is supposed to blow really bad up until about 9, 10 o'clock tonight, and then we're supposed to get some pretty amazing rain stuff.
Right.
By the way, what's the date today?
6th.
So we're Thursday, January 6th, if you're listening to the show. So, because I do that when I'm watching something I've recorded from TV, because I cannot watch the Weather Channel anymore.
Right.
It's just stupid. It's not weather, it's blech. But they have Highway to Hell on there.
Gotcha.
And Highway Through Hell. And, you know, love Jamie Davis and the motor truck people or whatever they do, but Highway Through Hell is one of my favorite obsessions. And, you know, but you see the local on the 8s every once in a while will come on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at it like it's actually real, and I recorded it like 3 weeks ago.
Right,
you know?
So you're behind it a little bit.
So yeah. I want to make sure that, you know, you know.
Being that it's February 6th, somebody's not listening to this in 5 days from now and going, oh, wait a minute, we got something coming?
Yeah, I don't know why, but I never watched reality TV at all, ever.
And you know reality TV isn't real.
Right. But Highway Through Hell is awesome. And then I started watching Forged in Fire. Have you seen that yet?
No.
If you get a chance, Forged in Fire is unique. It's classy. It's well done. It's literally, it's everything every American workman should aspire to. Just awesome show. But I don't know how I got hung up on those. But
we started talking about weather.
Yeah, and the Weather Channel just, God.
So what is this weather going to do to our fishing?
It depends on how much the rain hits. I think that because of the strength of this front coming through, I believe that tomorrow is going to be very wishy-washy as far as at least the first part of the morning, because that barometer is going to dump pretty hard around 9, 10 o'clock when that frontal boundary is supposed to come through. But I think by 10, 11 o'clock tomorrow, you should start to see an increase in the fishing. But tomorrow morning, I don't think it's going to be an early bird gets the worm.
If they're going to bite at all tomorrow, it's going to be late. That's a pretty good drop in barometric pressure.
Right.
And air pressure affects water pressure. Water pressure affects the swim bladder of a fish.
Mm-hmm.
So when the air pressure dramatically drops, and fish that are in less than 10 feet of water are mostly affected by it.
Right.
The shallower the water, the more effect it has. Once you hit 30 feet of water, you've got another atmosphere. 60, you got two atmospheres. Very little effect if you're going deep. But in shallow water, the effect of a barometric pressure drop means the water pressure is reduced, and that expands the swim bladder of a fish, making it hard for them to stay upright. It makes them hard to stay in place. if you were able to stand up only if your lungs were expanded to a certain pressure. And if your lungs expanded more than that, your feet wouldn't hardly touch the ground. You wouldn't be able to walk. Believe it or not, your feet touching the ground is a critical, important thing. That's how you walk. You're held down to the ground with the gravity. But if your lungs, as you deflated them, you went to the ground to be able to stay upright. And as you inflated them, you could literally float off of the ground, which would mean you'd tumble through the air if you didn't have a way to support yourself. That's kind of what it's like to be a fish when you have a massive air pressure drop. The air pressure decreases the water pressure, inflates the swim bladder of a fish. And even micro pressures change without the fish doing the changing. Makes it very hard for them to stay upright. They could float upside down. They're gonna be thinking about a lot of things, but eating isn't one of them.
Right. Just staying makes alive. Them very extremely uncomfortable right. in general. So
did that make any sense?
It did, and I had one biologist explain it to me that it's like the fish have the flu. Everything hurts. Their blood pressure drops a little bit. And, of course, the swim bladder is expanded, pressing against the other organs. And it's very, very uncomfortable for fish, especially if it's a rapid drop in pressure.
Well, that's
pressure.
One of – yeah, rapid drop because if I think if it's a –
They can't adjust to it.
Yeah. Because you're sitting there, and I think fish over the eons have figured out that, hey, they sense a storm coming.
And they head for deeper water. Deeper exactly water, for the reason you said.
And they're going to go, I got to eat now because I don't think they're going to be able to eat. It's like when you first get the flu, you know, you might want to have an extra meal or two because you might not eat the next day.
Right.
Yeah, and that absolutely makes sense. So, I mean, I think we're going to see some pretty bizarre fish pattern for at least the next, I don't know if it's going to be quite 24 hours, but definitely at least probably 18 hours.
Well, tonight's going to be the time to go.
Yeah.
Right. Before the front hits is when you want to go get to the spillways, get to the dams. As soon as the front goes over your head, you might as well go home. You know, stand in the rain because once the front's by and that air pressure is dropped, then it's over for a while. And in my opinion, it's going to not fact, but I'm guessing you're really not going to see much of a bite until late tomorrow afternoon.
Okay.
Well, that's not good for my business. I mean, I'm telling people I don't even know if I would go fishing tomorrow morning at all.
No, and it is. It's one of those double-edged swords because it's like it's surprising how some of these major fronts really extremely affect these fish, and then other times it doesn't do anything. But I'm going to lean towards noon for sure would be the earliest I personally would go out if I was going to go out tomorrow to try. Because
well, by noon and then by the time you get there and all that, you probably have a good chance. RJ, weigh in. Do you think it's going to be a morning bite, afternoon, or even, God forbid, and I hope it, because it costs me a lot of money when that happens.
Right.
Because tomorrow's Friday. So is there going to be a Friday bite sometime, or are you think it's going to be as late as Saturday?
I think it's going to be an evening thing. I mean, this is Thursday, so things are going to shut down later tonight, and tomorrow it's going to be much later, I think, in the day. Because the other thing that's going to go on is you're going to have wave action. If you're on the saltwater side, you're going to have a lot of wave action, and you're still going to have quite a bit of wind. The wind's not going to drop. It's not going to be as fast, but it's we're going to have a good clip of a wind, 15-20 miles an hour.
This morning, Terry and I are sitting on the back porch. You know, we still smoke, so we're out there. She drinks tea, I drink coffee. And I said, well, I got to go. I got to get to work. You know, I got stuff I got to get together and all that. And we go, and she's standing by the front door. I go to kiss her goodbye, and I turn the doorknob, and almost knocked me over with the wind because on the backside of the house, there was literally no wind, which didn't let me know that the front side was going to be blowing so hard I almost couldn't hold the door. Mm. Because my house is, we're 26, 28 feet above sea level, but it's like 14 feet up on stilts. My floor is at most people's roof level. And that wind comes in unstopped, you know, for a long time. When you're down ground level, the houses, the trees, everything blocks that wind. You don't get much of it. As soon as you get up about every 10 feet you go up, you're getting more wind. Like going up on a skyscraper, maybe 10 miles an hour on the ground, but it's 50 miles an hour up there because there's nothing to stop it. And same thing happens on the water. When we talk about people, they say 5 to 10 mile an hour winds. You get out on the water, it's blowing 15.
Oh, yeah, every time.
I mean, you just, whatever they say, add the two together, and that's what it's going to be on the water.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, it'll be, the cool part is at least with Charlotte Harbor as a whole, you know, we've got so many hundreds of miles of canal systems and river system that we can run up. I mean, look at what you guys have got right here in Northport between the Myakka River and all of these saltwater canals that run up along off of Biscayne and Cornelius and stuff. Those are some amazing habitats to get into to go at least explore and try to do some different type of fishing rather than being out in the open water. You know, and then the freshwater aspect of it, you got lots and lots of possibilities. So, you know, that's the cool part about this area. So it's not like the Great Lakes where you're pretty much open water fishing pretty much exclusively unless you got one cove, but getting to that cove is next to impossible.
Yeah, and all of the sheltered freshwater canals in Northport and Englewood and Eljo Bean, that area, they're teeming with bass and all kinds of fish right now. I mean, everybody's going out into their backyard and catching fish.
Absolutely, except for me. Fishing's rough behind my house. It's one of the worst I've seen in 20 years.
Is the girlfriend catching fish?
No.
Well, then the fishing's bad. If you're not catching fish, we're not going to worry about it.
Yeah.
They're doing the seawall across from you, so yeah. That may have an impact on it.
It's been tough. It's been weird.
Tarpon.
Yeah, there's another now, oddball.
Yeah. Okay, we got about 10 minutes left, so I can get to both of them. Let's do tarpon. What's the... You know, what's the scoop?
I'm not getting any feedback of tarpon the way we were, you know, a month ago out there at like Boca Grande area or any place like that. But from the just below the 41 bridge here on the Myakka River all the way up to above Snook Haven, there's been a lot of juvenile tarpon being seen and caught. And then same thing in the Peace River from basically the 75 bridge up to the... Sanssouci Trestle, the Shell Creek Dam, there's been juvenile tarpon from 10 pounds to 60 pounds. And guys are catching them in some, most of it's being caught in some of your deeper spots, your deeper troughs and drop-offs. But several guys up here by the 41 bridge here in Northport on the Myakka part have been catching them up along the sawgrass. They're catching 15 and 20 pounders. They're snook fishing and red fishing and hooking the tarpon in pretty decent numbers. A couple of guys have caught them on topwaters. One gentleman was in. He was catching all his on the cow shad tails and a couple different Z-Man lures that he was talking about using. And then up on the Peace River, the guys are catching them on the traditional bait busters, the cow swim baits, and some guys are throwing shrimp. One guy's using little Mayan cichlids and little tilapia that he's catching up there by the Shell Creek Dam. He's catching them on a little tiny hook with either a piece of fish bites or a piece of shrimp on it and saving them and going out like he's snook fishing, but he said he's hooking tarpon pretty regularly on every trip. He's hooking at least 2 to 3.
I remember when tilapia was the number one tarpon and snook bait on the Peace River because every few years we get a massive spawn of tilapia. I mean, massive. There's tens of thousands or millions of tilapia invade the Peace River and the tributaries.
Right.
And the tarpon go ballistic on them. And I don't know if fish talk or make noises when they eat, but it just seems like all of a sudden the run starts and the next thing you know, there's a few fish hitting and in a week it's loaded with them.
Yeah, it's like every fish from Boca Grande Pass and the whole existing surrounding harbor canals all inundate now, that one little area for a couple few days. It's
you're
bizarre.
The more scientific of us, RJ. Do you think that when fish load up eating something, they pass gas in a different way and maybe that trumpets the news to the other fish?
I have no idea about that theory. But you know, there's
come on, guys. Wait a minute here.
All right,
this actually could be legitimate. I mean, they could get all loaded up with these fish.
It could be sound travels.
Trumpeting sound. Yes, coming out sound as travels. Passing the gas from that.
But more likely with travels is scent and oils and things like that going downriver.
Yeah, well, it would have scent. I was still half right on that.
You're right. Yeah, we'll go with it. We'll go with it. So.
Yeah, I'm not touching that one.
But that's
oh, I think I'm funny. Yeah.
Not as funny as my hat. But I think that's what happens when fish are schooling up on a particular bait ball. There's all kinds of things being emitted. Sound, scents.
Even the visual, them just bumping into each other, knocking scales off.
And all of that is traveling with the current. So when you get that stuff going on in a Peace River, I'm not surprised that fish come up from the lower ends of the harbor and they find their way up there.
Well, and it's all instinctual to survive, so I think it's not just one definitive answer. But I'm thinking, like, you know, when we talk about the smell of something, well, you got the smell of the actual bait being crushed, so that's going to release a different type of scent. But just like anybody else, you know, you get an adrenaline dump, you're going to release a different type of enzyme and
see, I was almost with you on that, if you exclude the adrenaline part.
Yeah, you're
we're going to go with that, Frank. We're going to include dump in the equation here.
Different enzymes into the water.
Well, it would be an enzyme. All right. Go ahead.
There's just a lot of different things that all play a role into it, but it travels for...
Oh, God. You ever been in a room? Never mind. Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how they all hone into it in a very, very quick, short amount of time.
Yeah, within a day or two, you've got them all up there. So,
yeah, so it's kind of cool. So I'd be, you know, if it's a little too windy over the next couple of days, go up into either the Myakka or the Peace River and start scouting around a little bit and see if you can find some of these tarpon, because it's not very often you run into this where guys are actually catching good to decent numbers of tarpon in
February. A 60-pound juvenile tarpon. I know we're saying juvenile, but 60-pound fish will beat you up pretty good.
Yeah, well, even the little 20-pounder will beat you up, and they're actually pretty darn fun because they're so acrobatic.
Yes.
And they'll challenge you because you don't need the big heavy tackle for them. You're using your snook and redfish or bass tackle on them. You know, it's pretty fun.
All right, I have a thing. There are no fish to catch or eat in Charlotte Harbor because everything's closed except black drum, blue runners, bluefish, crabs, blue crabs if you want to eat them. Let's see, there would be hardhead and sail catch, which are both edible and not bad if you use a deep fry recipe. I've told you that one before. But let's go past, we got cobia. And let's see. Believe it or not, we have eels. If you like to eat eels, we get a lot of American eels in the harbor, especially areas around the 41 bridges. There's flounder there. There is gag grouper, which very seldom, admittedly, are legal size in the harbor, but every once in a while.
But season's closed on them.
Okay. Jack crevel. And everywhere outside of Florida, they seem to be a food fish or considered a delicacy. But for some reason in Florida, they're considered that you're not supposed to eat them. We have ladyfish, which I don't recommend, but it is edible, but you really got to work for it. Lizardfish, another edible fish, but I'm going to have to be pretty hungry, and they're going to have to close down every Wendy's in the world before I'm going to eat that. Mackerel, we've got Spanish, possible kings, not very often. There's a lot of some mullet in the area, not much. There's pompano out there. Now, redfish is closed. Sand bream is open. The saltwater crappie. There's a variety of sharks. There's sheephead. There's mangrove snappers. We've got snook is closed. We have spadefish. Theoretically, you could, if you're around the beaches, find a squirrel fish or two. We have triple tail. There are sea robins. Don't ever eat one. They're the most awesome fish in the world, the most beautiful eye you've ever seen. We have sand trout, which are legal, silver trout, sand trout. They're just like a spotted trout, no spots. That's why they're not called a spotted trout. And then with the sugar trout, small bait fish style, exceptionally good to eat, but you got to fillet a lot of them. Stingrays, which a lot of people are eating nowadays. Just a huge whiting we've got. Oh, God. The list goes on and on and on. And I get a little annoyed sometimes because people tell me, well, you're not allowed to eat any fish in the harbor. Everything's closed. It's ridiculous. There's 2 or 3 dozen possible species of fish to catch here in Southwest Florida. Out of those, 3 were closed. And now we also have gag grouper being closed and a couple other ones. But basically, everything's open except there's less than 5% of the fish available are closed.
And the funny part is, I've asked several customers, well, do you eat fish? Well, no, not very often. It's like a 50-50, you know, you have 50%.
Why were you worried about it being closed?
Right, exactly.
I don't eat fish. I don't want to keep any. Is it open?
Right.
Really? What difference does it make? Right. If you're going out to catch fish and release them anyway,
yeah,
that's legal all the time because you cannot dictate what's going to hit the end of your line.
Right. You know, 50% of them genuinely want to eat them, and I'm good with that. But it's just kind of crazy that you ask some of them, and they're like, no, well, I don't keep any fish. Well, then what difference does it make then?
Yeah, how is there, that?
Are those the only 3 fish that are in the entire harbor?
Do you know, RJ holds his finger up to show you what time it is, like you can actually see.
Sometimes
that.
I can see him if he's at the right angle, but the okay. print behind him.
I'm watching him. He's looking at you, hold his finger up like we got 1 minute left. I'm thinking,
sometimes RJ? It disappears with the zebra behind him.
Yeah, you hold your arm up for 1 minute. You'll get closer. Go ahead. All right, and remember, Iowa, we love you. We respect you. Come to Florida and vacation. You're welcome here, and we know the caliber of people in Iowa. Awesome folks. Don't let the news media tell you otherwise. And Fish and Frank here, Robert over there, RJ over there, and hey, Florida's pretty cool right now. Come on down and visit. I think you're going to like it. You may not like me, but I think you'll like everything else. All right, bye. I'm going fishing. Hook, sinker, and